I'm so happy to be the congregant preacher this week. Reading this passage and looking at various artistic renderings of Mary and Elizabeth, some of which I shared on the Facebook group today, you may have seen, it makes me think of my very dear longtime friend whose name is Joanna. The first time Joanna was able to visit after Jack and I moved to Brooklyn was in April of 2017. Joanna and her husband took a Greyhound bus from Richmond, Virginia to Port Authority and spent a few very special days with us. It was an especially thrilling visit because at that time, as Naomi will show you with my first picture addendum, Joanna was 4 months pregnant with her first child. So now to be clear, only Joanna was pregnant when we took those pictures. It's not an exact parallel. But even so, I feel like we're really giving off some like Mary and Elizabeth energy. When I look at these pictures, I see laughter and surprise and love, but most of all, joy. Hold on, I'm going to adjust my screen really quickly so I can see you guys better and see my notes. Okay, and that's what I want to reflect on tonight, joy. In tonight's text, we meet two young women. Young Mary, who is probably a teenager at this time, has just before this passage had two incredible pieces of news from, of all people, an angel, a messenger of God. The biggest news is that she has found favor with God and has been chosen to bear God's son, who will be the Messiah for her people. And after asking a few logistical questions, Mary accepts the job. Then the angel tells Mary that her cousin Elizabeth is also miraculously pregnant. Elizabeth is much older than Mary and has been considered barren her whole life because she's never been pregnant or had children. And thank you, Naomi. You can take the picture down now. So that recap brings us up to this story where newly and miraculously pregnant Mary hastily makes the journey to see Elizabeth, who is entering the third trimester of her own miraculous pregnancy. And I absolutely love the immediacy and the joy that fills this story. As soon as Mary hears that her cousin is pregnant, she hits the road to find her. As soon as Elizabeth hears Mary's voice on the porch, she feels the Spirit of God move through her and the baby in her womb starts somersaulting. The joy is palpable. It's easy to see that they're both just exulting in the midst of their bizarre but incredible circumstances. The word joy is used just one time in the story, at least in this particular English language translation. But it so perfectly captures the whole episode. And while I was preparing for the sermon, my mind wandered to other joyful encounters in the Bible. I thought of David dancing in the street after the precious Ark of the Covenant had been returned to Israel. I thought of the many stories about estranged brothers finally reuniting in peace after violent and turbulent separations, like Jacob and Esau joyfully reuniting, or Joseph and his brothers in Egypt. And perhaps the quintessential joyful biblical reunion actually comes a little bit later on in the book of Luke. It's a parable Jesus tells his followers about a son who finally returns to his father's house after much hardship, and his father immediately runs to meet him, welcoming him with open arms and a lavish party. And that's the parable of the prodigal son. Most of those joyful encounters spark from a relief of some kind. Relief that Israel's sacred holy items had been returned to their rightful place and not destroyed by their enemies. Relief that an estranged family member is still alive and maybe has forgiven a grudge. Many biblical stories of joyful reunion are deep sighs of relief after a long struggle or a long time of mourning. But this joy between Mary and Elizabeth is, I think, something very special. Something more generative and full of new life in a way that's unique to many other stories in the Bible. And to dig deeper into that, I want to switch our focus to another specific word, the word blessed. Elizabeth uses that word three times in speaking to Mary. Blessed are you among women. Blessed is the fruit of your womb. And blessed is she who believed that there would be a fulfillment of what was spoken to her by the Lord. In the Word Biblical Commentary, John Noland offers a fascinating take on this speech. He observes, Elizabeth does not wish or offer blessing to Mary, but recognizes blessedness. She recognizes blessedness. What a powerful thing to recognize blessedness in another person or recognize it in yourself, like Mary does actually in the passage that comes immediately after this one, where she sings out, "All generations shall call me blessed." But we will talk more about that passage in December. It strikes me very deeply to see these women recognizing blessedness in themselves and each other for a few reasons. One reason is that it's all too common for society to pit women against each other in order to uphold power structures like patriarchy and white supremacy. Intergenerational friendships between women are often fraught with criticisms or uneven expectations or different styles of communication. The world, and tragically specifically the church, also tends to nurture self-hatred in women. Hatred because their bodies don't measure up, or their ambitions aren't in the prescribed direction, or they aren't expressing their sexuality or their gender the way they ought to. You guys know the list goes on and on. And when women are taught to hate and judge themselves, even subconsciously, it's not a big leap to hate and judge other women, including dear friends and family members. But in this text, we see a rejection of competition or suspicion or condemnation. It's an encounter between Mary, the unmarried teen mom to be, and Elizabeth, who's old enough to be a grandmother. And they aren't peppering each other with questions or raised eyebrows because they're both coming off of divine encounters. They recognize and take joy in one another's blessedness. Between them, we see camaraderie and joy, the kind of joy shared between people who have perhaps been underestimated or underserved by society in similar ways, who perhaps even underestimated themselves, and who now cannot stay silent or keep still about the active and exciting parts that they will each play in the wild and mysterious plans that God seems to be carrying out in the world. Which brings me back to my friend, Joanna. And Naomi has another picture for you. I love pictures as sermon illustrations. So as you can see from this picture, I have been friends with Joanna for a long time. This, I would say, is probably us at ages maybe 14, 13, 14, 15. We met when we were young, and like most teen friendships, we loved each other both because of what we had in common and because of ways we were different. Eventually, I was in her wedding, and then she was in mine. She and her husband bought a house literally around the corner from my parents' house. So even after Jack and I moved to New York, we still saw them on every single visit home. Assuming that youthful friendship actually survives into adulthood, a lot of people drift apart from their unmarried friends when they get married or from their childless friends when they start having kids. But none of that ever happened to me and Joanna. I may be a northern city mouse now in a third floor apartment with two cats, while she's a homeowner in the southern suburbs with a bunny and a child. But we are still each other's biggest cheerleaders. Being friends with her taught me how to recognize blessedness in both our journeys, different though they've been. Being friends with each other helped us both deprogram from a lot of internalized misogyny that we learned from the world and the church. For example, we helped each other learn that women could be prophets and teachers too. And as you can see from this last picture that Naomi will share, hold on, I'm gonna wait for the grand reveal. And Quinn, her incredible baby boy and my very best buddy, is helping us both remember that even though someone may be small or underestimated by the world around them, they can still be wise and filled with God's Spirit and tremendous agents of joy in the world. Thank you, Naomi. You can tragically stop screen sharing, but isn't that just the best baby you ever saw? It's the third week of Advent this week, and Advent is a time when St. Lydia's is reflecting on radical hope. The wild notion that if we wait for it, miracles can be born inside of barns and angels can appear in the night sky. The joy of Mary and Elizabeth's meeting is one of radical hope. Blessed is she who believed that there would be a fulfillment of what was spoken to her by the Lord. Of course, this is just the first chapter of Luke. Mary and Elizabeth still have a lot ahead of them, including many sorrows. Both their sons will become revolutionaries, eventually executed by the government for challenges and chastisements that strike fear and anger into the hearts of the rich and powerful. But their futures will also hold more moments of joy. They will laugh with friends. They will play with their children. They will watch magnificent sunsets. Before their sons die, their sons will offer hope and grace that still change the lives of many people today, that still change the lives of the sick or the poor or the disenfranchised. The world still resonates with things that were said by Jesus and John the Baptist, like repent for the kingdom of heaven is near, or love your enemies, or don't worry about tomorrow. Elizabeth and Mary can't know any of these particulars quite yet, of course, but the hope and the joy is there with them in this moment. And as an aside, the literary foreshadowing is remarkable. Before Jesus, the Messiah, is even born, the author of the book of Luke paints a picture of these two faithful women who are moved by the Spirit to rejoice at the work that God will do through this baby, though they don't yet understand it. Later, Luke makes a point to note that after Jesus dies on the cross, his women disciples remain close by and return to his tomb mere hours later to anoint his body after all the men have fled. It is the faithful women who receive angelic miracles in Luke chapter 1 and later in Luke chapter 24. It is the faithful women who arrive at the empty tomb and are greeted once more by angels. I suspect each of these faithful women is able to cling to their hope, their joy, because they recognized blessedness and they followed it. I'm not always good at recognizing and remembering that I have inherent blessedness. I'm thankful of the tiny moments that remind me, like the sign in front of my favorite pizza place that reads, "Pull up, beloved." Or when our dear congregant Hannah Soldner texts me on Fridays just to check in. I think joy and our ability to recognize blessedness are connected somehow. And in a world like this one that just constantly feels so overrun with disease, corrupt leadership, racism, transphobia, taking space and time to joy in one another and recognize one another's blessedness can be a really revolutionary act. We may have sorrows behind us and more sorrows ahead, but it is in our doggedness to carve out a space for radical joy that helps ignite the sparks of radical hope, which sustains St. Lydia's in the midst of exhaustion and uncertainty. Joy is the feeling when we're all singing together. It's when we celebrate Charlotte's puppet shows or our congregant Mark's newest nail polish color, or we see Andy's cat Zaluba on the perch behind her. Joy is when we came together a couple times earlier this year for socially distanced picnics in the park, or the couple of services we had on Sackett Street, waving at a safe distance from behind our masks. It's celebrating what a good boy Christian's puppy Walt is. And it was my shriek when our congregant Jason told me that his wife Rebecca was finally pregnant. Or our laughter when Heidi's son Levi dances naked in the background of her screen. Or the sleepy smiles and jokes we make during Zoom noticing time after a long service. Despite our many different and often difficult circumstances, and in spite of a world that may think we are too small, or useless, or too young, or too old, taking radical, untempered joy in one another fortifies us, offers us stamina to make it through another day, and gives birth to hope. Hope that joy is not just fleeting, but may come again tomorrow, too. Hope that God's promises for this world will still be fulfilled. Hope that our actions can make a difference. And hope that the story is not yet over, but that a better and holier story might be just beginning. We share the sermon here at St. Lydia's. So we'll hold a few moments of silence together. And after the silence, Christian will ring that excellent bell again. And you're invited to share a story or experience that was sparked by the text or by my message. And it can be a story of joy or hope or a story of something else. But we share stories and experiences and not opinions, because Jesus told stories and we're trying to follow that example. So join me in a few moments of silence.